Time Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have Matt Moore ready to ring in the new year in a fedora of all things to wear. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm fine and dandy, like sour candy. How are you doing, Zach?
Well, it was okay until you said that. I don't really know
what that... No pros with a Simpsons reference? Come on.
No, I don't think so.
You sound a little tired, buddy.
I'm exhausted. I don't do anything, so I don't know why I'm exhausted. I slept, I don't know, 7 hours, which is a lot for me.
It's the cold.
It might be. It might be the cold.
That's how I get in the winter. I just want to eat and sleep all the time. I turn into a bear.
I might be pre-tired for tonight's festivities.
Maybe you're exhausted from Friday.
Friday. All right, let me tell you.
I'm just going to sit back for a few minutes and let this unfold.
This is... I want everyone to know that the NBA dunk contest is not the only thing that needs fixing. It's all dunk contests. I, through a friend of mine, got invited to... I don't even know how to describe it. The best way to describe it is it's a performance art hipster trampoline dunk contest. It's like there's... performance art involved in the judging. There's the dunk contest. You can use a trampoline. It was like a 7-foot rim, but it's better to use the trampoline to make it look aerial and all this stuff. So people had like routines and stuff. And I got invited to this by a friend kind of last minute.
And you were able to go because?
I was able to go because you decided you wanted to work for some reason.
You're like, no credit because I opted in.
You're like, wait a second. I don't know. I don't want to have a Friday night off. I think I'll work.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So with my ankle, you know, and I found out there was like no padding on the ground, so it's not that high of a jump. But I just decided no padding. It's a hard floor. I'm just gonna throw the passes. My friend's gonna do the dunks. So we started to come up with stuff. First dunk we have, there's six teams. First dunk we have is he's running alongside me. I throw a pretty razzle-dazzle pass off the backboard. He dunks it home. Place goes nuts. Fantastic. He's like 6'4", so the 6'4 guy using a trampoline to dunk on like a 7, 7.5-foot rim. You know, it can look pretty spectacular. And then, like, no one's really doing anything. Like, one of the groups is a group of all girls, and they sing like parts of songs from The Sound of Music, and then like throw in this like supposedly clever line that usually involves swearing. And then one of them would grab the ball, jump off the trampoline, and dunk.
What?
And, yeah, and it was like basic stuff. And that's what they did for three straight dunks. You were allowed three dunks, and they totaled up the scores. And so the second one, we're in like this plate. We're in this, I don't even know how to describe it. It's kind of like a warehouse. There's a little balcony up above that's like, I don't know, maybe 20 feet in the air. So second dunk, I go up there. I drop a bounce pass from the balcony. It takes us like three times to get it right. But he dunks it home. Place goes just crazy. Like, they are eating out of the palm of our hand. And it got to the point where, after the first couple, he was like, all right, this is the last one. We have to get it on this. And, like, announces it to the crowd. Like, you would have thought this was set up this way. And so I just throw the pass and walk away. Like, just very, like, nonchalant. And he dunks it home and Place goes crazy. So we are clearly leading. There's one other team that's using this guy who's actually really athletic. He's like dressed up as an old man and he's using a walker, and they have a whole routine based off of this where he's like dropping prescription pills and stuff. It was pretty funny. So this is our only competition.
It's like a takeoff of the whole Uncle Drew thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and so this is our only competition at this point.
You got the off the backboard.
Yeah, like, we've got the drop from the second balcony bounce pass.
Did you do like a tomahawk on the first one? Or was it like a...
No, it was just, it's all two-handed, just power. Just absolute, like,
power two-handed,
just
like Blake Griffin two-handed.
Yeah, like Dominique Wilkins going at it kind of thing on a, you know, 7.5-foot rim.
Yeah.
And so the last one, the way the hoop is set up in the room is it's like 10 to 15, maybe 12 feet away from a brick wall. So for the last one, I say, we haven't practiced any of this. I say, hey, I'm going to throw it off the brick wall back over the backboard, and you're going to come at it and dunk it. And so this takes us, I think, four attempts. And we've never tried this. Everyone knows we haven't tried this. And so on the fourth one, we get it. And it's like, it was just, it was cool. Like, for what this contest was, it was easily the best dunk of the night. He finishes it really well. And so we think we've run away with this thing. And especially when our only competition that we had finishes fourth in the standings, when they announce that they're fourth, we think we've got it. Turns out we got second to the group of girls who just did Sound of Music and then a basic dunk, and I was furious. I was absolutely furious. Like, I don't think everyone was like really expecting when they announced us as second the kind of reaction. I kind of swore out loud, like, maybe this is horse feces. I don't know. Maybe I said that. And so everyone was kind of like, wow, this guy took this way too seriously. So we didn't get the trophy, which was a basketball with a knife stuck in it.
Oh.
I was so mad. I was furious. I was tweeting about it all night. Still, even yesterday, I was like, I can't believe we lost that dunk contest. If only we had been girls, we would have won.
Girls. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. How was your weekend?
And that's insulting for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, if they're going to win, they need to win it.
On merit.
They didn't come by it honestly.
And their singing wasn't good. You know, nothing about their performance was good.
And, like, Sound of Music, if you're going to choose a musical, that's not one to do.
No.
Do, like, you know, I mean, I know it's got to be female-centric, but there's, you know, there are other options out there. Like, even, like, Les Mis, I think, would be heavier with irony.
And it would be, like, just timely with the movie release. It's right. Fresh in everyone's mind. Yeah, it was complete crap.
Yeah, that's... I'm sorry. I would be tired. You are mentally tired from the anguish that you endured.
Yeah, and now I know what Andre Iguodala felt like when Nate Robinson won the dunk contest.
Yeah, just absolutely. That's terrible. I have no surprise that you're hothead this morning.
Yeah.
He's also hothead.
Is your head hotheaded?
My head is hothead.
Do we have a nightcap? Do we have a nightcap update?
I have a nightcap update. So, there's a store out here in Colorado, and there's various ones throughout the country called REI.
Yes.
It's outdoor stuff. And they're like super stores. I'm from Bass Pro Country. So it's kind of interesting to see REI, because the REIs are like, hey, do you want to go have fun outdoors and experience things and see the wonders of nature? And then Bass Pro Shops is like, do you want to kill things? Here are all sorts of ways to kill things. Like, the Bass Pro Shop in Branson, Missouri, it used to be, like, their headquarters, and it is one of the most massive, or it's actually in Springfield, I'm sorry, it's in Springfield, Missouri, and it is one of the most, it is unbelievable from a cultural standpoint. They have an entire, like, museum of nothing but stuffed dead animals. You walk in, there's a stuffed bobcat and a stuffed bear.
Oh.
Like, actual, not fake, like, actual stuffed dead animals.
Yeah. It's like Chris Kamen's house.
Everywhere and every conceivable type of duck thing that you can possibly think of. It's pretty amazing. So anyway, I have this gift card at REI that I got for Christmas. So I go in and I dropped a whole lot of money at REI this weekend. So they could be a sponsor of this podcast now. And anyway, I got two hats. And one of them it's called like a Sherpa hat. So, and it's made of wool and it's like lined on the inside. I tried that thing on. It is snug as a bug. My head has never been warmer at night. I am so thrilled.
Wow, you're like DeMarcus Cousins, just hot-headed.
Hot-headed. And another smooth transition. We're just weaving in and out. So DMC, you know, he gets reinstated. USA Today reports over the weekend that what we thought was true, which is ownership not unanimously, you know, overridingly basically demanded that Cousins be reinstated against the wishes of both the players and coaching staff.
Yeah.
Which is really, when you think about it, the best way to handle a situation.
Oh.
You're providing so much leverage for everyone there.
Yeah, I think when you're running a business into the ground and you don't have any respect of anyone in the league, I think it's a good idea to undermine any kind of stand you could take against a player being petulant against a coach. You know, I don't think Keith Smart has handled this properly, even with the reinstatement against his wishes. I think he has to kind of just get over it. But at the same time, surprise, the Maloofs are creating an absolute feces storm.
Here's what's amazing with the situation. There are three different parties involved, and all of them are wrong.
Yeah, how is that possible?
Keith Smart's not handling it well, the ownership shouldn't be getting involved, and Cousins shouldn't be causing these issues.
Yeah, three wrongs make a right, though.
So the trade rumors have busted anew, which is interesting because I would think that they're going to say that if they're going to put as much emphasis on he has to play, I'm not really understanding why they're going to trade him, which is what a lot of Kings fans are saying, that they're not going to trade him.
Right.
But there's been reports out from both reputable and non-reputable sources that we will not clearly state who those are. About who the trades are going to be. KSR, Kentucky Sports Radio, has got a pretty interesting one. I tend to trust those kind of sources a little bit,
Just
because you know KSR has ties to Cousins.
Right.
So there's a bunch of them on there. Houston's on there. Boston is the one that gets talked about the most.
Well, Boston is desperate for something to happen because what they have...
They are that dunk contest right now.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely.
They got blown out by the Kings. With Cousins dropping a triple-double.
That was that was their third straight loss by 18 or more, correct?
Yeah.
Which I think I saw a stat from maybe CSNNE or something like that where that was the first time in 35 years.
Yeah.
They had done that.
KG's mad.
Yeah, KG's mad. You know, if Pierce had any feeling in his legs, he'd be mad. I can't imagine. DeMarcus Cousins helps them for a plan moving forward. You have Rondo and Cousins. And it's not that Cousins isn't good. I think Cousins is very good. But I'm not sure Cousins fixes anything they need right now.
Well, I mean, I think he provides a guy down low.
Sure, which they could use. And, you know, he's a decent help defender. He takes a lot of charges. But at the same time, do they need the distraction of trying to rein him in, teach him the system, teach him how to be, and get all that ready for the playoffs? I just don't think that it would – I don't think it would be a bad move. I just don't think it would fix anything for this season.
This is what's weird is it's one of those where when I think about it, I'm like, well, you know, it's adding a player of great talent at a position they need who could theoretically, if KG were to do his magic on him and Doc – I've said in the post that over the weekend that Doc and KG need to run good cop, bad cop on him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like if all that works out. But then I want to take a step back and be like, okay, let's take a look at how this would look outside the realm of the Celtics. And let's say going forward, let's say where KG were to just be like, you know what, I don't have any more. Because he also told Yahoo this weekend that basically he's going to evaluate it year by year. And if he feels like he doesn't have it, he's going to leave.
Yeah.
And so let's say theoretically he were to retire next year. What if your core going forward, let's say that you're not the Celtics. Let's say that you don't have Doc Rivers because let's say Doc walks away as well. Let's say that you're not even the Bobcats. I'm trying to think of what's like an average team, like the Bucks or
sure.
The Pistons.
Sure.
One of those teams. And you're saying our core going forward is Rajon Rondo, Jeff Green, and DeMarcus Cousins. Aren't you terrified?
Well, I wouldn't be terrified because, I mean, I think Rajon Rondo's awesome, and I think DeMarcus Cousins is very fixable in the right setting. So I wouldn't worry about those. I mean, the Jeff Green being my third best player going forward, that would terrify me. But building around a combo of Cousins and Rondo, I don't think it would terrify me. I'd be pretty happy with that.
Here's the thing: it's one where if they get along, if they connect, because they're on the same wavelength in terms of hating everyone, then it's perfect. Like, you have you basically have, like, if it was music, it'd be like hate core.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what you have, right?
Well, the good thing about them is whenever they said inflammatory things, they would just be saying them at the same time so they wouldn't hear the other person.
Right.
So there couldn't be a problem there.
But the other thing is, if they don't, if they dislike everyone to the point that they don't like each other, I mean, they could fight every single day in practice.
Sure.
You know, I just, you know, that just concerns me long term because it's one where you do need like something to keep the waters calm. I kind of said this today on Twitter. I was thinking about Cousins, and it's like teams really do value having peace in the locker room. Like, it just makes life easier.
Yeah.
You know, and you want peace in the locker room, and to forgive the analogy because I don't like the term, but war on the court. You know, you want guys that are going to battle on the court and do everything possible and yell and scream at teammates and the opponent and the refs and do everything you can to win. And then in the locker room, you want everyone to go about their business and just be cool.
Right.
And like Rondo and Cousins are two guys that are definitely not that. There was actually an interesting one. Dallas has been mentioned.
I just don't see what they give up. Like, no one thinks Roddy Bois is a thing anymore. I get that they, like, the Kings don't really have cap issues. I mean, they could very soon with all the, you know, contracts they're going to have to give out in the next couple of years, but I just, what would, I mean, you had an interesting scenario of a three-team trade involving Utah where the Kings get Paul Millsap, but is Millsap going to re-sign with them? So that, you know,
my thought there was, even if he doesn't re-sign, let's say he doesn't buy in, he's like, I'm gone. Because they're under the cap, they're going to be able to sign and trade him.
Sure.
And that's actually, being a team with a major player, like if you want to call Millsap a star, if you define him that way, a sub-star, two-star status, having a player like that and being one of the few teams that can facilitate a sign and trade, that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, for sure.
The other thing, and that's the kind of thing, though, is like it's got to be a three-teamer, because what you have to do if Dallas is going to get him, it's got to be basically their picks plus Sean Marion and his contract, along with, you know, maybe Jay Crowder, who's, you know, like a promising young player. Mix those three guys, those elements together with, you know, whatever veteran you want to throw in.
Here's what I don't like about that for the Kings, though. I don't feel like you often get good value in return for a sign-in trade, and you would also have their bumbling management right now trying to facilitate that sign-in trade.
Well, that's kind of thing that Kings fans have been going with me about that. They're like, we can't get a good deal. And I'm like, well, if you, like, I don't know what to tell you about your man, because, like, the other option there, like, if we're going to go down that road, then we're talking about, like, likely scenarios, and it's that Petrie ends up selling him for, like, 50 cents on the dollar and saying, no, we really like what we got back. No, Ben Gordon is a really great haul for us.
But what if you just keep him?
Yeah, and I know you're usually the advocate of that. And, I mean, I think it's a fine plan. I just, you know, I guess the only reason I wouldn't is this. At some point, you need to reward the guys that have bought into your organization.
Sure.
If you want to run your organization well, you need to be like, well, no, look, like Isaiah Thomas, Jimmer Fredette, even Tyreek Evans to a large extent. You know, I'm trying to think who else. Jason Thompson is a great example.
Yeah.
James Johnson, last couple of games, really. Like, these guys have bought in. They're trying to play well. They're committed to us. They're really trying to do. They're trying to help us. They're trying to make this team be better. Is it fair for us to keep basically making them hate this team and hate their lives because they have to put up with Cousins and his crap every day?
Probably not. But one, I don't know how many of those guys you have to have long term. You know, and how, I mean, you could trade pretty much all those guys and get value in return in theory. And at the same time, I feel like you have Cousins for a minimum of 4 more years if you just decide to keep him, because he is not going to...
No one leaves after the rookie.
Yeah, no one's taking the qualifying offer and risking that for unrestricted free agency. Like, it just doesn't...
I wish somebody would, but...
Oh, no, it'd be fantastic. Well, maybe he's the guy to do it. But until that happens, it's just not something you worry about. So you know that you're probably at worst getting a 4-year deal with an opt-out after 3. And you have time to find a coach, find management to make it work in that time. You know, I mean, at the same time, this is the Maloofs, this is Petrie, like, they'll probably screw it up. But in theory, I just don't know that you have to do anything. But when you're looking at who is involved, you're probably right. Maybe you do have to trade them.
Well, I'm also like, you know, Dan Fagan's going to sabotage you either way.
Yeah.
You know, his new agent is Dan Fagan. And
they don't like each other.
That's Dwight's agent. And I mean, that's my thing, is everyone's like, oh, he's got a bad reputation, or he's got a bad relationship with Petrie. And I'm like, I don't care about that. I care about the fact that he wants all of his clients to play in Brooklyn.
Right.
He just wants to be Prokhorov's BFF. Like, that's what this is, you know. So, I mean, I think it's...
Oh, I just remembered he's Rubio's agent, and I got sad.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Worst New Year's ever.
I'm sorry. But hey, no, I got nothing. Hollinger's odds even have you guys out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think there's a lot of situations that you kind of have to work out. Let's go back to Boston, though. I'm not as much as I talk badly about them, I still think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I think they will too, because
I don't have any. I'll put it this way: I think they're going to be fine. I don't have any logical reason to think that. No. I can't look at anything on their roster or anything about their play or anything about what I've seen or anything that I know in this world and say, oh, they're going to be okay, other than they always are.
I mean, they're really bad, really bad on the road. And they're pretty decent home. I think they're, what, like 9-5 at home?
Is that what we're calling pretty decent now?
9-5 at home's good.
Yeah, they're 9-5 at home.
They're just... They suck on the road, and
they're also losing big games at home, though, I feel like.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
But how many – I just don't feel like they're going to have a ton of big games the rest of the year, and I think they're a playoff team. Like, that's the thing. Is it's like, oh, are they going to be okay? Are they going to make the playoffs in the East? Yeah, I mean, I don't see Philly overtaking them. And then after that, like, I just – is Orlando going to make a run? Probably – not, and I don't see Boston being a below 500 team. And if you're not below 500, you're making the playoffs in the East.
You remember when they were a really great offense and couldn't defend at all?
Yeah.
Well, now they're 13th in defensive efficiency.
Which hey, that's is good.
Not good. That's not good enough.
No, but it's improved.
Congratulations. You know, for a team that's supposed to contend for a title, they're 13th in defense. But they've slipped to 21st in offense.
Well, that seems problematic.
Here's the thing is interesting is the way that all the new pieces are not working is what's interesting. It is what's kind of interesting to me. Because, like, Courtney Lee is starting to get it offensively, but he's still a ways off defensively. And then it's like all of their good offensive players are starting to slip backwards, and then their bad offensive players starting to go forwards, and the opposite's kind of happening on defense, except for KG.
The thing, I mean, just the thing I look at with them is they're just so horrendous when KG isn't on the floor. I mean, they have nothing inside. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to have trade pieces when with like guys like Sullinger and Jeff Green or whatever. When in Fab Mello, when none of those guys can do what they need them to do. Like, you can't put them on the floor long enough to show that they're worth trading for. So, I mean, it's just, they're just so bad when KG has to sit, and he's 36 years old, 37. Like, he needs to sit.
That's been kind of my thing is, you worry about, you know, really putting him through a rigorous season.
Like, they're 15 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court defensively. Wow. 15.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
It's really weird, too, because I look at the numbers, and they're 30th in offensive rebound percentage, which nobody is surprised at. And
right.
I don't think that's going to be that's never going to be a problem for them. Like, they sacrifice offensive rebounds to get back on defense.
Right. They had the lowest percentage in history last year, and are lower than that this year.
I will say this though, and this is a major thing with me. I was watching this last night against the Kings. I watched it against the Warriors game. These last couple of games, and this is like the low point for them. But this has been a trend all season. They're not going after offensive rebounds so they can get back on transition defense, and teams are still beating them up the floor.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I noticed and wrote about a little bit for that. For the 4-point play when it was Clippers Celtics, it's like, all right, how do they stop the Clippers transition off? Oh my God, they're so bad getting back on defense.
Right? Like, I mean, that's a really big problem to me when you're looking at a situation where it's like, okay, you've got a 4-step advantage on them, you've got a 4-step head start, and you're still getting beat.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like you have to. Either you have to figure out a way to get back on defense, or you have to say, screw it, we need to get offensive rebounds. You can't be in the middle there. Like, one thing has to give, so you have to change your philosophy either with offensive rebounds, or you have to say, all right, no one cross the 3-point line on offense, let's just all get back on defense.
I've started looking at One thing, it's interesting because of the Celtics fans, you get, there's kind of, there's always, you know, there's smart fans and bad fans, but there's always kind of like a differential between the really savvy ones and the especially stupid ones. And the especially stupid ones are like, no, like, Pierce is coming into shape. Like, look at his scoring numbers. And the really savvy fans are like, Pierce is not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, this is my biggest thing is I feel like Pierce can still be okay offensively, but God, he is just defensively. Man, watching him just try and move, he's just got – I was talking about this yesterday. I watched him work over James Johnson in the post yesterday, right? So yeah. He goes into the post, and he goes in that little – the elbow post that he does, and he puts on the whirling dervish, that the series of moves, and he gets him a little bit shook just because his footwork is still so good because he's a veteran and he's just got so much experience.
Yeah.
And then he tries to make the turn for the baseline kind of floater slash hook shot. And one, watching him try and make the full turn is painful to watch because it's so slow. And then when he tries to jump, he jumps like a quarter of a millimeter above the ground. And James Johnson blocks the crap out of it.
Right.
And I wanted to cry. Like, that's just sad to see that. And you could say, like, well, you know, it's a West Coast game and he doesn't care and he'll have it. But, man, I'm just – you know, I feel like Pierce can still score 27 points a game in a playoff series, or at least score like three times, just based off of his ability to find open looks by being really smart and savvy. But if you need him to go one-on-one on either side of the floor, you're in such huge trouble. And that's a major – that is their second to third best player.
Right.
In that kind of condition.
Right. Yeah, it's rough to – I mean, defensively is where, really where – I think they can be good enough offensively – in theory, to get him looks when they need to, where it's not isolation, but defensively, like, it's not even the Joe Johnson crossover from early in the year. It's just basic stuff. Like, he just can't get to spots anymore. And maybe he'll get into shape and he'll figure it out, but he just, like, it's the rotation just isn't there. And he's not even good at, like, digging down on double teams or anything like that to get deflections or get steals. Like, it's just... he's just in this no man's land where he can't get somewhere fast enough and he can't stay out on a shooter well enough. Other than that, they're fine.
Oh, but great news, though. I have great news.
Yeah.
Avery Bradley's coming back, so at the rim, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, they'll be great.
I will say this. Actually, Celtics blog, I tweeted this, had a really great post, and one thing that actually relates to this conversation, Bradley's going to be able to pressure the ball handler in transition to force them to slow up.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
That can help a lot.
I mean, that'll help some, but it still has to be a conscientious effort to get your bigs back on defense because they don't have – I mean, there's just so much confusion when they're trying to get back and match up. They're, like, that's what I noticed from looking at all that film. Like, there's just way too much confusion for a team full of veterans.
And then there's also the thing of, even though to us it sounds crazy, because it's like, well, Avery Bradley's not that good, but if the team believes he's that good...
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times I'll see this, teams will just start to believe in the idea of, you know, when we get Avery back, that's really going to help.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, you know, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, and it could boost them just off that mental aspect, or if it doesn't help, they will go into a huge realization of their own depression. Like, it's going to be – it could either be really good or just epically bad for them.
It's – KG's really preaching that everybody's going to come together and how he likes this because this is like the hard part where guys have to – he said something – he referenced like the plastic people, their faces melting off. That's who KG is. And but, you know, he still has a lot of faith in the team, it seems like.
You know how Bill Simmons had, like, that Tyson zone thing, or if you could believe anything, you could say Mike Tyson did anything and he would believe it. That's, you could offer up, you can make up any analogy, and I would say, oh yeah, KG probably said that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some games tonight on this New Year's Eve.
Let's do that.
I got a line for you that's kind of tricky.
Okay.
The Magic are getting 10 at home from Miami, who's lost two straight.
Oh, that...
that's dangerous. That is a dangerous, dangerous line. Like, I looked at that and was like...
because that Miami, should be easy, right?
Miami just got... Miami got its ass kicked by Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And they are not a team that gets mad in response. They don't do that.
I would just think by accident they would win by 20.
I mean, Jameer's hurt, so that hurts. But here's the thing, though. Is
Hedo back?
I'm not even going to respond to that. Why does that matter? What do you...
Because, that, I mean, if he is, that's worse. That's worse for them if he's back.
Right. You know, they do have injuries, and I get that. But, man, I just, you know, the Magic have done such a good job this year of surprising teams.
Right.
And, you know, I have to look what they are at home as I stretch this sentence out. They're a stellar 7-9 at home. So, I don't know. That's all I got. But... I feel like that line's really dangerous.
I know I tend to be, let's say, curmudgeon-y when it comes to younger players.
They're bad and how bad they are?
Yeah, when it comes to younger players. And I don't think Andrew Nicholson is bad, but I'm failing to see what the internet is buzzing about. I mean, basketball Twitter and the internet just love Andrew Nicholson, and I'm like, yeah, he's a decent role player, but... Like, talking about him as, like, a trade chip and stuff, like, I mean, is he really that good?
I feel like a lot of the basketball online, Twitterverse, whatever, really likes the idea of the Magic more than they actually like the Magic.
Yeah.
Game of the day is definitely Rockets-Hawks.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, Rockets are giving four, coming off another blistering by San Antonio, who's gone back into Punisher mode. The Hawks... have been playing really well lately. They're a game out of the top place in the East, Zach.
Yeah, that won't last.
A game.
That won't last. Yeah, here's the thing that someone...
Okay, well, let me ask you, though. If Josh, let's say that they were doing this and Josh Smith was replaced by any other standard power forward in the league.
Well, he'd have to be a good one. I mean, Josh Smith is good. He's just nobody I want as my first or second best player.
Let me throw some names at you to replace him. I really want to go through this thought exercise with you.
Right.
Like Jason Thompson. Better? Does it need to be better than that?
Yeah, it needs to be better than that.
Okay, better than Jason Thompson.
Yeah.
Okay, so Luis Scola.
Oh, it has to be better. Has to be able to defend.
Okay. Can't be as good as Kevin Love.
No.
Carlos Boozer.
Boozer is probably a lot better outside of Chicago. But I would say, like, I mean, this is a very good player I'm picking, but, like, if you replaced him with Paul Millsap, I would feel fantastic about the Hawks.
Okay. So if you replaced Josh Smith with Paul Millsap, you really would feel like this team maybe – how would you feel about this team if you were to consider – let's eliminate all power forwards. Let's just eliminate the entire position, okay?
Okay.
Okay? With this Hawks team, you know, I don't know. This is not the same don't trust the Hawks team. I really don't believe that because – so many of the guys that were problems for them have been replaced by, I think, you know, better players and more reliable guys. Like, I feel a lot better about Kyle Korver shooting that kick-out three than I do about some of the guys they've had in the past.
Oh, sure. Someone actually asked me about them today because he asked me about them in the preseason. He's like, oh, do you trust them now if they don't have it? I said, no. They're going to be a good regular season team that doesn't matter in the playoffs. And then he G-chatted me today. He's like, hey, so how do you feel? They're 19-9 now. You know, how do you feel about them compared to how you did in the regular season? I was like, they were 18-10 last year, 28 games in. Like, they were a very good regular season team last year. They're a good team. They just don't matter.
See, and I still contend that, so many things happened in that Celtics series to screw them. I felt like they had such a good shot there. And then, like, everything went haywire.
Right. That's what happens with the Hawks.
I know, but that's the whole thing. Is like if that doesn't happen, which I can't really count on it happening. I don't think they're you know magnetized for bad karma at this point. And I almost feel like the basketball gods want to reward them because they decided to be like, oh, "What? You're going to take Joe Johnson? Done."
I think they
were like, "Oh no, he's our superstar. We're not sure. Oh no, take it. Go. Deshaun Stevenson, Yohan Petro, fine, yours."
I just think like for me to think that they're going to do something in the playoffs, I need Lou Williams to be better than he's been. Not that he's been bad. I think they need a guy that is consistently able to create his own shot.
You are discounting playoff Teague, and I am offended, sir.
Playoff who?
Pacers are getting 1.5 at home versus Memphis.
Pacers have been playing well lately.
I love this narrative of the Pacers season because it's going to be one where they just like trudged their way forward out of the sewer and into where they were going to be the entire time. Yeah. Like, they are right on track to clean themselves of all of the crap off right in time.
Man, if Roy Hibbert could start making shots, they would be a lot better.
And he's gonna.
No, Tim Donahue of 8 points, 9 seconds had a great post, I believe. I think it was him, about how the wrist injury could be affecting his hook shot, which was basically his go-to move.
Yeah.
And why it looks so bad. And if that heals and that's the case, then it makes sense that he'll probably explode in the second half of the season.
They're tied with Chicago for the lead in the division. They're 9-3 at home, 8-10 on the road. They're 7-3 in their last 10.
Yeah.
I mean, they've gotten it together. So, I mean, I really like that team. Memphis is struggling right now. They're going back into the offensive swamp.
So yeah, I mean, they just don't have consistent perimeter scoring. That's what's killing them, right?
Yeah, I dreamed. I saw Les Mis this weekend, so I keep, like, singing show tunes.
Okay.
I dreamed a dream where Wayne Ellington and Jared Bayless mattered.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I've been there with Wayne.
Never. Never, never, never.
They're still the best defensive team in the league, though, right?
They're up there. If they're not the best, yeah. They are.
I know. It was them and the Pacers, maybe the Clippers that were up there recently.
They had a really great performance against the Nuggets, who were on the back to back. But in general, I'm concerned that they're sliding back to where I kind of thought they would be.
Yeah.
Especially with the Clippers kind of separating themselves. And that's okay. I'm totally fine. As long as it doesn't end up with a 1-4. The only thing that would be worse than the Clippers-Grizzlies 4-5 matchup in the first round is a 1-4 matchup Clippers-Grizzlies in the second round.
Really, any matchup with the two of them for you is just going to be painful.
The Grizzlies do, in fact, have the best defensive rating in the league via the NBA.com.
Okay.
Pacers are second. Those Clippers are third.
God, they are.
Jeez, they are.
They play the defense and the offense. They play
them
both.
They're in town tomorrow. I'm going to the game in Denver, which is going to be ugly, I think. Here's the bigger problem, I think. Factor how good the Clippers are playing, and then I'm looking at all of these teams in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, no one matches up with them well.
I actually like the way the Thunder match up with them.
That's okay. But so few of them. Like, Memphis, I don't like it. The Lakers, I don't like it. I want to say San Antonio because of last year, but there's a reason I picked the Clippers to win last year was if DeAndre Jordan is...
Yeah, with this version of DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. With this version of DeAndre Jordan and with this version of Blake Griffin and a healthy Chris Paul, that's a whole other series.
Yeah, I mean, if the Spurs had home court, I might take them just on a whim, but...
See, I never think that matters because San Antonio's crowd is always...
No, but I think that matters for routine with the players. Yeah. I don't necessarily buy into the whole, like, oh, they're so loud, I can't believe it, I can't, you know, hit
I
a shot
OKC.
Now.
I buy OKC. Yeah. Get rattled.
For the most part. But I don't know. I think when it gets deeper into the playoffs like that, I just don't really think it rattles those guys. It might rattle a couple of guys on the bench, but I don't – for the Stars, like, I just don't believe that it really rattles them that much. But
well,
I think,
and, like, San Antonio, like, doesn't get rattled.
Yeah.
For example. Thunder giving 12 to the Suns. Well, let's just move on.
Well, that Suns-Wolves game the other night was excruciating. I feel really bad for Michael Beasley. I really do. He was one of eight.
He has a weird relationship with that player.
I really do. I hate him on the court. I love him off the court. He was one of eight in the game, and the only make he had was a goaltended layup that Steve's caught like just as it hit the glass. He played 10 minutes. He took 8 shots. Had one of them goaltended. That was his only make. And he just looks lost. Like, he looks like he has no idea what to do. And it's like, it's this thing where I'll get over it and I'll start making fun of it again. But it's like, I feel bad for him right now.
Phoenix is in a really weird place. I don't know what they're going to do. I have no idea to figure out if they're going to blow it up, if they're going to make major changes, if ownership's going to stay cheap, if they're going to if they're just going to clear roster space, if they're just going
to
make money.
I mean, they tried to spend with Eric Gordon, right? Like,
yeah, theoretically they tried to spend.
Yeah. And look,
by the way, welcome back, EJ. Somebody got mad at me for referring to him as EG because that's his actual initials.
Oh, shut up! That's so dumb. You can call him whatever you want.
I was like, I was like, I'm not his childhood friend. So.
You can call him Twinkle Toes if you want.
Right. Here's a weird one. Spurs are 9.5 against the Nets. I don't know if that's low or high.
I mean, these Nets have not lost in the PJ Carlissimo era. They are undefeated.
We haven't talked, I don't think, since they played without Avery, and you know, I said, you know, they blew out the Bobcats, just detonated, just destroyed them. And I said, I was like, man, if you ever have an opportunity to bet on a team after they fire their coach, always do. I don't care what the spread is, just bet it.
Yep.
Every time it works. I wish I understood the dynamic of whether it's just players don't want to be saddled with the blame, or if they feel like it's just like a breath of fresh air, not having the tension, or what. But it's weird.
I wonder if it's a thing of the controls of everything are lifted for a game or two, and you get to just go out there and play, which doesn't seem like a great idea long term. With a basketball team in the NBA, because there is so much strategy involved, but maybe just one game you feel like, hey, we can just go out there and let it all hang out and just be loose and have fun. Maybe that's the team dynamic with it.
Before we go, what's your New Year's resolution for the year? What's your work resolution for the year?
Well, work resolution.
I'll go first. I'll give you a second to think about it.
Okay.
I am resolving. Well, one of my actual resolutions is to, this is not work related, but in general, I'm reading 3 random Wikipedia articles a day.
Okay.
I'm just pressing random 3 times and reading the entire thing just because I like I find that I get too much in the habit of only consuming NBA media.
Okay.
And I like to be able to be like, oh no, like I learned about something that's entirely different today. And so like I just go down the wormhole too much where it's like, you know, I'll do nothing but read about the NBA and like watch one episode of South Park, and that's my entire day.
Okay.
I need more outside stuff. I think one of my big things is to not necessarily get so suckered into wanting to. I fight against wanting to be too forgiving with teams that are struggling. You know, instead, I want to be a little bit more of to be a little bit forgiving of teams, to like Boston and like the Lakers and some of these teams. I really want to not rush to judgment so much because I'm a very impulsive writer and I tend to write about stuff that's happening. I'm not Dan Shanoff necessarily in that form, though. I love Dan, but I do tend to react a lot, and I want to head more in your direction, to have a little bit more patience and a little bit more long-term view.
I mean, most of that's just acquiring laziness.
Right.
That's a good way of doing it. So I like what you're saying, though. You don't want to take your foot off of their throat, but just release the pressure a little bit.
I want to let them breathe just slightly.
Just enough to remain conscious. I have certain goals with this podcast, let's say, and not to get specifically into those goals, but my goal is to grow the podcast quite a bit. That's my goal for 2012. And my personal goal is to win a damn performance art hipster trampoline dunk contest.
And we're all behind you, Zach.
I'll have to get this on video because I'm actually dunking in the next one. I've got ideas because there were certain things that my friend didn't feel comfortable doing, like windmills on a 7-foot hoop, which I feel like are just really easy things to do. So, yeah, win a dunk contest, grow the podcast.
And you do like an East Bay funk dunk while doing something really hipsterish.
Oh, yeah, like cleaning my monocle.
Or like singing the Black Keys.
Right. Or what if I twirl my pocket watch and then dunk with a windmill with the other hand, so it's like a double windmill? Ooh. That could be something.
That could be something.
Yeah.
I'm excited for you. I think this is going to work out well for you and your family.
Send in your dunk contest ideas. Remember that there is singing allowed and there's a trampoline involved.
Everyone stay safe on New Year's Eve. Have fun, but make sure you stay safe. I always worry about people tonight. So make sure that, you know, make the right decision.
And call it.
You want to actually have a 2013.
Even if you have to wait 2 hours for it, call a cab.
Call a cab.
All right. Thanks, everybody.